Hello, this is Chris Yerkes reading to you from the April 17th edition of the County Chronicle, and again we'll start with the first page stories. Arcola School Board, Pulling on the Reins of School Finances by David Porter. Arcola School Superintendent Dr. Tom Mulligan sounded cautionary alarm bells last week regarding the district's finances. The state's evidence-based funding formula was a huge change for Arcola and helped the district add staff and programs. While the program promised not to reduce funding, it did not guarantee additional funds, he said. He expects funding to flatten out and said the board would need to look at whether changes need to be made. While staffing has gone up considerably over the past 8 years, enrollment has dropped. In 2013-2014, Mulligan said the district had 61 teachers and 4 administrators. Now it has 71 certified teachers and 5 administrators. Meanwhile, enrollment dropped from 686 in 2018 to 624 this year. He said 4 teachers are retiring soon and he expects to be able to replace them at lower salaries. He questioned whether the board should consider whether the district needs as many teachers as it has. We have to start having that conversation, he said. He said the district is in good shape with about $8 million in the education fund and can weather deficit spending, but for how long? He projected that salaries and benefits will increase by more than $700,000 by 2027. He said the district could get 20 to 30 years with a deficit spending, but if revenue declines and expenses increase, the district could deficit spend $1 million in 3 years. He said there's no need to panic, but that the board should take a look at the numbers. He also explained how some funds are restricted, so a surplus in one area does not help another area. He acknowledged that some people's question the school district's spending on capital improvements, such as the $1 million for locker room renovations, but that those are paid with restricted funds. The county's 1% sales tax, for instance, cannot be used for education expenses. The district education fund was done so well in recent years that the district has borrowed from it to pay for capital improvement bonds, so when the bonds are repaid with interest, it goes back into the education fund, further boosting that account. He added that the district benefited from the COVID-19 federal funds, but said these are going away. In looking at areas to save money, Mulligan noted that many of the special education programs are housed outside of the district and costs have increased significantly. Those might be brought down by bringing more services in-house. Mulligan said he's not suggesting widespread cuts in spending. I am recommending that the district begin to change the conversation about finances. During the public comment portion of last Wednesday's meeting, Sarah Osborne addressed the board about a threat of gun violence reportedly made by a grade school student. She said she doesn't think anything would have happened, but in this day and age, shootings happen every day. She acknowledged that her information was secondhand and may not be entirely accurate. The board did not discuss the issue publicly, but Mulligan said after the meeting that the district has a threat assessment team in place and that the school implemented the procedures in place. In other business, the board approved the purchase of new weight equipment as previously discussed to be installed in the existing space. The board also approved the resignation of Megan Clark, grade school principal. Mulligan said she is taking a position outside of education. Also resigning was Brittany Goldstein, a bilingual teacher. Other resignations approved were Taylor Wilkes, special education teacher, Greg Vanderveer, custodian, and Randy Schwartz, junior high boys basketball coach. New hires were Hugo Garza, Jr., ESL instructor pending completion of a provisional certificate, Mayra Lyons, bilingual teacher, and Justin Glass, high school history. A year leave of absence was approved for Ashton Carson. Among other business, the board heard from band and chorus teacher Dick Kevin Boyle, who spoke about recent performances at the Grand Ole Opry in Graceland. Several students also spoke about how educational and exciting the trip had been. The board approved a music field trip to St. Louis and a junior high student high council honor roll trip to Holiday World. The board also approved a 5-year contract with Gould Transportation for bus service. Mulligan said the rate will be negotiated annually and that the contract has a 5.5% increase for next year, which is about $27,000. Some transportation costs are reimbursed, he said, so the increase is about $11,000 for the district, Mulligan said. He said the district was required to bid the service this year. Several companies made inquiries, but only Gould submitted a bid. The board tabled a request from the Douglas County Health Department for facility use for an after-school program. Mulligan said the DCHD wants to create programs in Arcola and Tuscola and possibly include Arthur and Villa Grove students. We need after-school programming, Mulligan said, but the district school buildings are busy all the time. He said they would need to figure out where to put the program. Grade school principal Megan Clark said there have been 77 referrals for summer school and the district would need to look at the space available. Honors night was scheduled for May 7th. The next article, Arcola City Council Libman Expanding Broom Palace Funded by David Porter. The Arcola City Council set the ball in motion for another Libman Company expansion Monday night by approving a resolution to pay for planning and redevelopment costs. Libman reportedly plans to add on to the north of their existing property, which is not in the city's tax increment finding, TIF, district. City Administrator Bill Wagoner asked the council to approve the planning and redevelopment phase while the TIF issue is being addressed. We'll figure out the TIF later, he said. The proposed Broom Palace will be built downtown where the Metropolitan Block was raised, also got a boost from the city Monday. The council approved a business development grant of $125,000 to be paid in $25,000 increments over 5 years. Also Monday, the council approved $1,700 in tourism expense for the Chamber of Commerce toward website and billboard costs. The measure had been approved by the Tourism Committee. The council also approved a setback variance for Rosa Martinez in the 600 block of Poplar for a small addition. Wagner said the property is on a double lot and the variance exceeds the normal side setback regulation. The zoning board approved the plan. The city adopted its budget for next year as previously reported. Also approved were cost of living increases of $1 per hour for full-time employees and 50 cents per hour for part-time employees. Alderman Terry Ferran and Joe Bezerra were absent from the meeting. The next article from the Villa Grove City Council, cleaning up properties. The Villa Grove City Council met on April 8th for their regular meeting with all members present other than Alderman Kerry Cheeley. Mayor Cassandra Eversole-Gunter then called for a vote on the consent agenda, which included the minutes of the last regular City Council meeting and then minutes of the closed session of the meeting held March 11th and the meeting of the April 1st Committee of the Whole meeting. The council also authorized a payment of bills in the amount of $536,000 payable. Payment number 21 to Brewer and Russo. Also included was the purchase of pitching mounds in the amount of $6,000, an engineering agreement in the amount of $31,000 with ERA for parking evaluation at Richmond Park, and $1,800 with Central Illinois Electric for Ball Diamond lighting repairs. Administrator Athey then noted that she was also busy finalizing budget packets for the April 11th meeting. Chief Robert Reed then reported that he had been in contact with the owners of 509 North Douglas Street regarding cleanup of the property. The mayor then stated that the cleanup would be taking place. Chief Reed then noted that the owner of 112 North Pine Street had been found in contempt of court for failing to take action regarding violations associated with that property. Finally, Reed noted that the two new officers were making progress as they began patrolling individually. Community Programs and Services Director Bethany Sarovska then made her report, stating that soccer, baseball, and softball were set to begin next week. She also noted that she was looking to hire more umpires and that anyone interested should contact her. Next, she noted that there were 19 high school students who signed up for soccer, which was the first time in several years that Villa Grove was able to field a high school soccer team. Finally, she reported that she was working on the acquisition of vending machines for the community center. The council then moved on to new business, which included a resolution to asphalt the city's Harrison Street property and to approve the city manager's attendance at the ILCMA summer conference. Both motions were approved unanimously. The council then moved to table a motion to approve the new building application, permit form, and contract for BCA Engineering to oversee North End development until a future meeting. All motions were approved unanimously. Finding no further business, Alderman Tony Hooker moved to adjourn at 6:37 p.m. The next front page story, Bison Ranch Expands, Opening Retail Store by Tony Hooker. Growing up in Kansas, the thought of being a bison rancher in central Illinois was probably one of the last things that Kathleen Reuter would have seen herself doing. After a few of life's twists and turns, a fateful trip to Wyoming, and a career move to the University of Illinois for her husband, here she is, raising America's national mammal on 68 acres of reclaimed coal mine ground with her company, Reuter Bison LLC, headquartered in Villa Grove with a ranch at Woodstock. About 30 years ago, my late husband, David, passed away in 2022, and I started thinking about our retirement and what we wanted to do after we retired. He had worked in zoos for years and had actually worked with large mammals and bison, and we went out to Wyoming to visit some relatives and we were introduced by some in the emerging bison industry, she recalled. We decided that would be something we might be interested in, and then we moved to Illinois and began looking for land. Finding land isn't suitable for farming grain crops in central Illinois proved to be problematic, and there was no way the Reuters would have been able to afford to purchase tillable soil for their fledgling bison herd. That's when they stumbled upon the old reclaimed mine near Murdoch that was for sale. We did testing on the water and the grass and everything we found it suitable for bison, and in 2011 we got the land and got our first animals from an auction in 2012, she stated. With the birth of their first babies in 2013, the operation was up and running, but by standards, the operation was kept under wraps until they were able to expand it to Champaign-Urbana and beyond to the Chicago suburbs. We sell to a couple of stores in Champaign-Urbana and also the Urbana Farmers Market on the square, Kathleen divulged. We have a son who lives in Rockford, and we've been able to sell our products in the Rockford Farmers Market also. Bison need significant room to roam, and though they have 68 acres in Douglas County, they quickly discovered that they needed more acreage for their herd. According to Kyle Miller, a Philo resident and Unity High School graduate who serves as the raid manager, their Northern Illinois connections led them to seek further grazing land in that part of the state. In 2021, we partnered with McHenry County Conservation District up north of Chicago, and we now have a herd up there. We lease some land, and with our herd up there, it has kind of become our breeding herd down here, and then our meat animals go up there after a year or two, Miller said. Kathleen and Kyle have continued to honor Dave Reuter's commitment to using a model of providing a sustainable source of food while building natural habitats and restoring native prairie. This level of commitment has led to a unique space where scout troops, school children, and others can come to see bison in natural, unpressured environment, learning about these magnificent beasts. An added benefit to the ranch is that they've been very conscious in their efforts to return it to the native prairie that the bison might have encountered in Illinois in the days before it was settled. We've been growing our herd and we're trying to reclaim the land too, Kathleen stated. We'd really like to get it back to native prairies, so we've been figuring out pasture management and how many animals we can have here. Maintaining a herd of bison can be an expensive endeavor, so over time, Reuter Bison Ranch has experimented with a number of ways to increase revenue. Included in these efforts is an opportunity to stay on the premises through their prairie stay listing on Airbnb. As time has passed, a number of Reuter Bison's customers from Douglas and Cole County and places to the south have expressed their desire to have a location that is a bit closer than Champaign-Urbana or Frankfort, and from that request came the latest venture, an on-site store. We built a little shed out where there with the thoughts that it would be a site for glamping, but then we decided to open this through Airbnb, and we thought it'd be nice to make it a nice little store, Kathleen said. Called Prairie Rim Bison Shop, the store is located at 1133 North County Road, 2050 East, Villa Grove, a mile north of Murdoch and across from the Murdoch Cemetery. An open house is scheduled for 1 to 4 p.m. Sunday, April 21st. As expected, an operation of this size is too much for one person to manage, and that's where Kyle comes in. Miller, a University of Illinois graduate who started on a part-time basis in 2019, now serves as the range manager. I've always just kind of been interested in the animals, and we have family down in Newman. It's where my mom's side is from. We would take different ways down to their house from Philo, and we would end up going through Murdoch sometimes, and one day we were driving, and all of a sudden there were these bison right there by the road, he exclaimed. We started coming down that way all the time, going to visit my grandparents and everything, and we saw the ad on Facebook one day, and David was the one that hired me, and then Kathleen hired me full. It takes bisons 3 to 4 years to reach maturity, which is one of the reasons that bison can be a bit more expensive, and Reuter's commitment to ethical treatment of their animals also leads to more expenses during the raising process. Another difference between bison and cattle that Miller wanted to express was that bison aren't domesticated animals in any sense. I won't go into the pasture without a vehicle. They can run 30 miles an hour for 30 minutes or more, and I can't do either, he exclaimed. When dealing with an animal who can grow as large as 2,400 pounds, discretion certainly is the better part of valor, although the herd has come to recognize Miller over the years. I call him the bison whisperer, Kathleen stated. When his truck comes down the lane, the bison take notice. Indeed, Miller admitted that his presence, especially on the side-by-side, compels the herd to come to the feeding areas because they know they're about to get their daily ration of grain. Interestingly, grass that grows is high in iron content, which inhibits the animal's ability to ingest copper, which has forced the team to feed them grain which has been laced with the mineral. I would say they're 99.7% organic, Kathleen said with a smile. Both Miller and Reuter agreed the bisons are so much more than a source of protein. I love to expand and do more than just sell meat, Reuter said. I love the animal. I love the tall grass prairies, and I'd really like to do more ecotourism and the educational area because I think they're America's animal. For Reuter, the question of the difference between a bison and a buffalo is one that has come up often over the years. In this country, the terms are used almost synonymously. The only true buffalo are the Cape buffalo in South Africa and the Asian buffalo in Southeast Asia. And when you see products in the store that say buffalo, that's Asian buffalo. It's a domesticated animal, she explained. It has taken some time, but Miller has become acclimated to working with these magnificent creatures. These guys are pretty gentle. If you respect them, they'll respect you. But these are still wild animals that we raise, and they're not truly domesticated like cattle or pig or anything like that. Once you work with them long enough, you can kind of gauge their body language, and the big giveaway is their tail position. So if their tail goes up and kind of forms like a question mark, that's how you know you need to back up, Miller recalled. For Reuter, the bison's resilience is the biggest part of the story. There's so much more to the history of the bison in this country. People come out and they want to see it, but when they start listening to what happened 150 to 200 years ago and how they came back and what they can do, when they come over the land bridge, there's just so much more to their story, Kathleen emoted. And the last front page story, Randall's and Arthur Changes Hands, Keeps Name by Trudy Feyerreisen. Harold and Katrina Hirschberger acquired a long-time business in Arthur on January 1st of this year, Randall's. Randall Electric, as it was previously known when Bob and Grace Randall established the business, has been a staple in the town for over 75 years. Bob and Grace's son and daughter-in-law, Rod and Carol Randall, took over the business 42 years ago and have enjoyed the opportunity to carry on his parents' hard-earned business, as Rod shared. I enjoyed continuing to work with the customers that had been established when I had gotten to know them as a kid. Later, they and their kids became customers. Being a local business, owner encourages involvement and some flexibility to be part of the civic organizations that benefit one's community. I've enjoyed that. One of the things that makes this transition so special is that someone now outside the family still wants to keep the name. As new owner, Katrina commented, "We don't want to lose the Randall name because it's been here for such a long time." The inception of this transition was in November 2022, when Harold and Katrina came in to buy a washer and dryer. Katrina casually asked Rod, as he was doing his paperwork, if he had any plans to retire soon, and he replied quickly, "Nope," and continued to do the paperwork. Shortly thereafter, he looked up and said, "Unless you want to buy the business." Up to that point, he and Carol had offered to buy the property, but not the business, and Rod felt the business needed to go on. Unbeknownst to them, Katrina had shared with Harold that she would love to run the business, hence a perfect opportunity arose. A couple of months later, a proposal was presented that the Hirschbergers couldn't turn down, and steps began toward passing the baton, and the rest is now a new chapter in history. Harold and Katrina both grew up in Arthur area and have raised a family here. Harold formerly worked at Kate's Trailer Sales as a service tech, and Katrina has been an accountant, most recently working for Wegger Accounting in Arthur. They have three grown children, Kirk, Kira, and Kedrick, and two granddaughters, Peyton and Haley, who are born to Kira and her husband, Eldon. Their son, Kirk, works for the business, and they also retain longtime Randall employee, Toby Diener, who has been a service tech in the company for 37 years, which is a very big plus for these new business owners, in that he knows both the ropes and he knows the customers. Harold and Kirk plan to focus on the installs so that Toby can solely focus on what he does best, service calls. And Katrina will run the office. Katrina wants customers to know that service that they have already been established here and we're going to continue. We really respect what has been established and we want to honor that and carry on in the Randolph legacy, as it's rare for family business to have such longevity. The former owner, Rod Randall, shared, "I want to thank all the people of the Arthur community and communities beyond that supported our family business for 76 years. New hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. and Saturdays, 8 a.m. to noon." We'll move on now to the obituaries. Thomas E. Tom Ney, 94, passed away on April 4, 2024 at the Ney residence in Wasilla, Alaska. He was born October 16, 1929 to Bernard and Mary Elizabeth English Ney. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. on Thursday, April 18th at the Edwards Funeral Home, 221 East Main Street, Arcola. Military rites will be conducted by the Arcola Honor Guard at the funeral home. Burial will be in the Marshall Cemetery in Marshall. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior to the funeral, 10 to 11 a.m. at the funeral home. Leona M. Sherwanka, 88, of Tuscola, passed away at 3:05 a.m. Monday, April 15, 2024 at the Arthur Home in Arthur. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Thursday, April 18th at the Emmanuel Lutheran Church, 600 East North Line Road, Tuscola, with Pastor Jason Bratton officiating. Burial will follow in the St. Paul's Lutheran Cemetery, Sigil. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior to the services at the church. Mike Easton, 44, of Pisotum, passed away at 10:03 a.m. on Tuesday, April 9th, 2024 at Sarah Bush Lincoln Health Center in Mattoon. A memorial service was held Saturday, April 13th at the Edwards Funeral Home, Arcola. Pastor Gary Ford officiated. Visitation was held prior to the service at the funeral home. Burial was in the Davis Memorial Cemetery in Pisotum. Reba K. Thomas, 100, of Charleston, formerly of Hinesboro, passed away at 10:39 p.m. on Monday, April 8th, 2024 at Heartland Senior Living in Neoga. Funeral services were held Monday, April 15th at the Edwards Funeral Home, Arcola. Pastor Bill Strode officiated. Burial followed in the Tuscola Township Cemetery. Visitation was held Monday prior to the funeral at the funeral home. Charles Darling Brown, age 22 of Arcola, was killed during the surprise attacks at the United States Naval Base at Pearl Harbor, Hawaii on December 7, 1941. A graveside service with Navy funeral honors will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, April 20th at Arcola Township Cemetery, 950 East County Road, 200 North Arcola. The Reverend Ron Dickinson will officiate. Mitchell Jerden Funeral Home Mattoon is in charge of the services. Robert J. Steele, 76, of Urbana, passed away at 12:10 a.m. on Tuesday, April 9, 2024, at Carl Foundation Hospital, Urbana. Graveside services will be held at 3 p.m. Friday, April 19th, at Mackville Cemetery, Atwood. The family will meet at the Hillegas Schrader Funeral Home in Atwood and proceed to the cemetery. A celebration of life service will be held at a future date. Marilyn Kennedy, a beloved resident of Suffolk, Virginia, passed away on Sunday, March 3, 2024, at the age of 94. Her passing was attributed to complications arriving from colon cancer. Marilyn's life was one of love, dedication, and vibrant connection with her family and community. In accordance with her wishes, Marilyn will be laid to rest alongside her husband, Jim L. Kennedy, and son, Patrick, in Tuscola. Though she may no longer grace this earthly realm, Marilyn's spirit and legacy will endure in the hearts and memories of all who knew and loved her. Another article, Illinois Amish Heritage Center to host Sheep to Yarn to Quilts. Sheep to Yarn to Quilts will return to the Illinois Amish Heritage Center on Saturday, May 4th from 7 a.m. till 3 p.m. The event will feature sheep shearing demonstrations in cleaning, dyeing, and spinning the wool into yarn. Weavers will demonstrate weaving with looms and quilting displays, and demonstrations will complete the journey from sheep to yarn to quilts. Visitors will be invited to try their hand at many of the activities being demonstrated. Early Amish clothing, quilts, coverlets, and other hand-woven fabrics will be on display in the Schrock House during the event, including a blue and white coverlet that was woven by the Diener family before they came to America in the 1830s. Also on display will be the 1870s suit worn by Daniel Schrock at the time of his death in 1892, and the 1840-era Campbell family quilt made entirely from locally produced wool, dyed from plants grown in the area, and then spun, woven, and assembled into a quilt. Other activities will include a period laundry demonstration featuring a turn-of-the-century hand washer and wringer, period crafts, soap making, rope making, gardening, games and activities for the kids, pony cart rides, and a petting zoo. Tours of the historic Amish buildings will feature demonstrations and displays of the Amish way of life. Breakfast will be served at 7 a.m., a bake sale will take place, and a lunch and homemade ice cream will be available as well. Updates on all events, activities, and vendors will be posted on the IAHC website, www.illinoisamish.org, or on Facebook. The Illinois Amish Heritage Center is located 3 miles east of Arthur and 6 miles west of Arcola at I-57 on Route 133. Another article, ALOLF Benefits Supper and Auction, huge success. The Arthur Legacy of Love Foundation sponsored a Raise the Roof Benefits Supper and Auction on Friday, April 12th at the Otto Center. According to the organizers, the first-time event grossed $80,000, with some expenses still outstanding. The free will donation chicken dinner was prepared for 800 people starting at 4 p.m. and was sold out by 6:30 p.m. However, the lunch stand was able to serve the overflow crowd. An ice cream stand was also serving soft serve and root beer floats throughout the evening. A bake sale and silent auction were ongoing throughout the afternoon and evening, with a live auction starting at 5:30, and they all featured a variety of quality items donated to support ALOLF. Board member Dave Allen stated, "We're blessed and overwhelmed by the support and understanding. We are stewards for the community. We want to share with our community that our first CILA house is nearing completion, and we will have an open house to celebrate and show the community what has been accomplished once it is. In addition, we want to announce that we are currently working to secure a second lot and are eager to begin the construction process on a second CILA house after the first is completed." Brian Oye, OLOLF board member, said, "Looking at the crowd and seeing all those people working together for such a great cause, to me, is a picture of knowing how God is. It is important to let the community know how appreciative we are. All the support was just amazing. We have quite a responsibility, and thankfully have had continue to have people praying for us." Arthur Legacy of Love Foundation is a 501c3 nonprofit organization working to generate funds to help build quality CILA community integrated living arrangement housing for the special citizens of the Arthur community. Board member Omer Miller recommended it was a good time. Our community is richer when our special citizens can live here among us and be involved. It's a great blessing to have such a tremendous support from our community to help make that happen. Dave Allen added, we are very encouraged and humbled by the huge amount of support and encouragement the community continues to give us. We prepared for a large crowd and the turnout surpassed our expectation. Our goal is to unite the greater Arthur community around our vision of caring for our special citizens and to have fun doing it. Our benefit succeeded in doing both. So many shared with us how much fun the evening was and how successful they thought it was. We are blessed to live in a community where people care and make it a priority to support one another and share Christ's love while doing so. We saw that through countless expressions of love by so many who assisted or attended the benefit and contributed in various ways, whether in volunteering, donating for the meal, providing food or auction items to sell, buying items at the bake sale, silent auction or live auction, or in other ways. We're grateful and say thanks to you all. If you're unable to attend the Raise the Roof fundraiser and would like to contribute, donations may be deposited directly to the ALOL Foundation's account at the State Bank of Arthur or by mailing a check made out to ALOLF, Post Office Box 222, Arthur, Illinois, 61911. All contributions to the foundation are deductible for income, estate, and gift tax purposes. For more information, contact any foundation board member. They are Joe and Martha Yoder, Bruce and Kathy Oye, Omer and Nancy Miller, Joe and Rosanna Mast, Merv and Barb Helmuth, Marvin and Clara May Helmuth, Lloyd and Judy Gingrich, Howard and Judy Diener, and Dave and Kathy Allen. It was a fun evening of fun, fellowship, and fundraising for a great community cause. And one last article, part two of Arthur's CTE program by Chris Kessler. The industrial technology section of the CTE program serves a wide range of areas for the district. Semester classes include introduction to drafting, energy utilization, production and transportation, introduction to drafting, focuses on hand drafting mechanical and architectural drawings, discussion of various types of views, and completing a set of house drawings. The class concludes with a drawing and then building of a model shed. Energy utilization focuses on the types of energy from non-renewable, renewable, and inexhaustible sources. The class offers a variety of activities from the creation of a solar car and solar oven to hands-on labs covering mechanical, fluid, and electrical power. The high school production class is our introductory course to the wood shop. Topics include calculating, measurements using hand tools and power tools, shop safety, laying out working drawings, and filling out a bill of materials. Students will then complete several individual projects in the wood shop. The last semester class offered is transportation, which focuses on types of transportation, including land, air, water, and space. The class includes a variety of small hands-on activities from the building of a glider to the designing and building of a bridge that is then weight-tested. In addition to the semester courses, there are several full-year courses offered in the areas of beginning construction, electronics, computer-aided drafting and design, CADD. The construction class is designed to introduce students to the carpenter occupation will cover a large content area. Students are introduced to the theoretical knowledge needed to lay out rafters, stairs, and basic framing techniques. In addition, the students will design and build several projects throughout the semester, including a fundraising project that will be used to purchase material for their own final projects built at the conclusion of the semester. The construction class will also complete a 10-hour OSHA safety course that will give all students their OSHA safety card upon completion. Electronics is a full-year class with dual credit through Lakeland College. This class is great for any student that is interested in any type of engineering future or has any interest in residential or industrial wiring. The class will cover a variety of topics dealing with electronic circuits, including the creation of your own wiring projects. The last quarter of the class is completely devoted to residential wiring and is very beneficial to any student. The last class offered is CADD, which is a dual course taught through Lakeland College. CADD is an excellent class for anyone interested in any type of engineering. If you're interested in car design, architectural design, interior design, this is the class and program that will definitely benefit you. And that is all we have time for this week. This is Chris Yerke saying goodbye and see you again next week.